If you like YouTube, you'll love YouTube Premium. Hi, I'm Sean Evans from Hot Ones, and I want to tell you about YouTube Premium. It has offline downloads, so you can watch without Wi-Fi. Background play, so you can lock your phone, and it still plays, baby. Oh, and it is completely ad-free. Yes, I said it, ad-free. Try YouTube Premium for 2 months free at youtube.com/premium. Trial eligibility varies. Terms apply. Cancel anytime.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply.
A brutal and unsolved murder of a 16-year-old girl left the residents of a small town in North Carolina completely dismantled. At first glance, little is found about this cold case online. But the further I dug into this case, the more disturbed I became. Despite multiple suspects having been looked at, eyewitnesses coming forward, and boxes of damning evidence, to this day, no one has ever been arrested or charged for this murder. The victim's loved ones are still searching hopelessly for answers. This is the story of the murder of Judy Rawlings. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Perplexity, a Mystery Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Kadra. If you're new to the show, hello and welcome. I tell tales every single week that have perplexed me. So if you love a good mystery that leaves you wanting more, don't worry, you're in the right place. And if you end up enjoying today's episode, I would love if you continue to follow along. If you are a returning listener, hello, my friends, welcome back. I'm very happy you're here. We are diving into a very important true crime case today. This case comes from a Perplexed Society member, Jacob. Jacob, thank you for requesting this and bringing it to my attention. I do want to issue a trigger warning today for sexual assault and murder of a child. Please take care of yourselves while listening. And big shout out to Derek Levisher from Crime Weekly and Kendall Ray and Josh from the Mile Higher podcast. There is not a lot of information online about this case, so they were incredibly helpful with what they were able to dig up. The videos of theirs that I used will be linked down below. And very quickly, I would just like to welcome my newest patrons. Welcome to the Perplexed Society, Corey and Callie. Corey joined tier 2, and Callie joined the highest tier, tier 3. So Corey is going to unlock over 80 episodes of bonus content, and she's going to get early and ad-free episodes. Callie joined at the highest tier, so Callie will get all of that, as well as a t-shirt here in a couple of months. And I am sending out y'all's welcome letters with some stickers right now. So thank you guys so much for joining. It really, really helps the show, helps keep things up and running. And if that interests you guys, you can always go check out patreon.com/perplexitymysterypodcast. If you can't, I totally understand. It's tough times for a lot of people. I would just love it if you, for free, left a 5-star review wherever you are listening. It takes 2 seconds, and that is, by and large, the way that this show reaches new ears. So thank you in advance for that. And without further ado, let's get into today's episode where we discuss the murder of Judy Rawlings, featuring my special guest, Kim from A Million Other Choices podcast. Okay, so I have Kim with me here from A Million Other Choices podcast to talk to me about the Judy Rawlings case. Kim, thanks for being on with me.
No problem. I'm looking forward to what you have to say about this case that I have never heard of.
Yeah, I wasn't familiar myself, as we were just talking about. And thank you, Jacob, Perplexed Society member, for requesting it and bringing this case to my attention, because this is such a heartbreaking story, something that definitely needs to be talked about more. And as Derek Levisher has said, the private investigator who helped a lot in this case, he really doesn't understand why this hasn't been closed yet, solved. And you'll see that as we get into this story. So hopefully someday we will have some justice for Judy.
That is always the hope.
You're from Canada as well, right, Kim?
Yeah, I'm located in Calgary.
Okay. And I know you started a new series on your show where you're talking about just some of the differences with how people are prosecuted and how like the law works in Canada versus the US as well. And you seem pretty well versed in that. So I'm curious what you'll think.
Yeah, I started a new series called Let's Talk About Murder. And yeah, we talk about a number of different topics around, specifically around murder, and a lot of times the differences between Canada and the US, which I think a lot of listeners don't really understand. It's complicated, right? The different laws and stuff. So,
yeah, something I'm definitely still learning about. Well, let's dive right in. Judy Carol Rawlings grew up in Sophia, a tiny town near Asheboro, North Carolina, and she was born in 1985. At the time that she went missing, she was a student at Randleman High School, and this is a super tiny town. This is somewhere where everybody knows everybody. And a person who's going to come up a lot later as a person of interest. They all lived in a trailer park together. They could see each other's front doors. So everybody, you know, everyone's always talking to each other. These are people that, you know, they grew up with.
Yeah. Is this a fairly rural area?
Yes, definitely.
Okay.
A lot of hunting in the area, four-wheeling, things like that, which four-wheeling comes up in this story. Judy was described as being silly, just the sweetest person, very, very kind and very easily trusting of others. That's specifically something that her friends and family said about her. There's an episode, season 2, episode 1 of Breaking Homicide that I watched for this. It's on Prime for anyone who wants to watch it.
Okay.
Derek Levisher is the guy who's on Breaking Homicide. He's a former detective. He has private investigation experience. You guys might know him from his podcast, Crime Weekly. So So he was on there and like interviewed Judy's family and friends and found out a lot about this case, was able to uncover a lot of new evidence. So we will get into that more, but he's the one who talked to her family. So Judy has been described as a tomboy. She loved being outdoors. She loved riding bikes, and four-wheeling was one of her favorite things. She had a small group of friends that she was close with, and when she disappeared, she was 16 years old. So she was last seen on October 4th, 2001. So this was quite a while ago.
Yeah.
She was reported missing the very next day by her mom, Tammy Schmidt. And Tammy told police that she had last seen her daughter the morning of the day she disappeared at about 7:30 a.m. Tammy was on her way out to go to a doctor's appointment about 30 minutes away in Greensboro. She had actually been battling with cancer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Sorry to hear that. So sorry, what day was this, a school day? So would she have had her?
Oh, good question.
I'm just wondering if she had gone to school, that like her mom had last seen her when she was on her way to school, and if she had a normal day.
Right. Okay. So this was a Thursday. So okay. Yeah,
so
I would assume.
Probably a school day.
Right. That makes sense with timeline. She saw her at about 7:30. Yeah. And then they did say she hung out with a friend, Stephanie, that day. So possibly after school hours. And then basically her plan was later that night, she was going to go four-wheeling with her literally right next door neighbor, Tony Sierra Jr., and his brother, David, and a couple of other people.
Okay. So mom was probably calling around that night, and by morning decided it was time to call in the cavalry.
I would think so. Yes.
Yeah.
Tammy gives Judy permission to go, and Tammy would later say she actually was a little bit reluctant about Judy spending time with the Sierra brothers
not because they had like a known dangerous history or anything. They were like 17 and 18 years old, but they were just kind of the town troublemakers.
Okay.
Didn't really have a good reputation. They had like a history of petty crime and things like that, but nothing to ever make Tammy or anybody think that they were dangerous for Judy to be around. So initially, what's interesting about this too is that Judy had been asked by Tony to go ride these ATVs, and she said no initially for whatever reason. But Tony seemed kind of pissed off about this and was a little bit persistent and came back again later that day when Judy was hanging out with her friend Stephanie. They're back at the trailer park and he pulls up again on, he's like, hey, like, come on, come hang out with us. And that is when Judy was like, okay, fine, like, I'll go, and got permission from her mom.
Okay, but he was specifically wanting just Judy to go, or he wanted both of them to go?
He did not ask Stephanie to go. It seems like he just wanted Judy to go, and as far as I know, she was the only female that was there.
Okay, do we know if he had an interest in her romantically, or?
They don't specify that.
Okay.
Yeah. She asks her mom to go out. She says yes, and that's the last time that Judy Rawlings would be seen alive. It wasn't dark yet. Judy was actually really terrified of the dark, and part of why I think she had some reluctance about going is because they were talking about going ATV riding at nighttime. So Judy's like, yeah, I'll go. Basically, when she gets out there, there's going to be a lot more that comes out later, but there were multiple other people there. So that plays into theories later about who could have been involved, who saw what happen. She disappears. Tammy calls the police. Police arrive on the scene. They, of course, interview the Sierra brothers, and they told police that Tony had hung out with Judy that day. They did go ATV riding. But he said at about 11 p.m., Judy was ready to be dropped off, and so he drove her back. But instead of driving to her trailer park home, she specifically asked, allegedly, to be dropped off at a local gas station called Farlow Oil because she was going to meet a boy there.
Okay.
Family and friends know nothing at all about a boy. And also Farlow Oil, this is like a super tiny town. Farlow Oil closes at 9 p.m., and it's pitch black. So her family immediately is like, why would she want to be dropped off there and not at home? And it's like super dark there. And she was absolutely terrified of the dark, right? So it just didn't really make sense. So after Judy was reported missing, police, of course, searched the area. But this is very remote. There's a lot of like thick landscaping to go through. They had some volunteers helping as well. I don't know for sure, but I would assume as time passed, they had some dogs out there too. And they're really trying to comb through. From what I understand, the search was quite extensive, but they never found any sign of Judy. And 2 weeks has gone by at this point.
Okay, so were they initially thinking she had maybe gotten injured and or lost, or were they thinking foul play from the beginning?
They weren't necessarily thinking foul play from the beginning. I know that one of the theories was that there could have possibly been an accident while she was riding the ATV and maybe just had like fallen off and gotten stuck somewhere.
Right. But there were so many people around there that
that
doesn't make sense.
Yes. Okay. Yes. And really, like, the only alibi of Tony's is that, like, he dropped her off at like 11:30-ish, went back to his trailer. My understanding is that his mom told police, like, oh, yeah, he was here, but that will come up later.
Okay, so he's looking a little suspicious.
For sure. And then just so everybody knows, this is also, according to Derek Levisher, a pretty established but still small police department. They did have a homicide unit along with a couple of other units. There are murders in this area, so it's not like they didn't have experience with investigating a homicide.
Okay. That's actually interesting, because a lot of times, little, especially rural communities, it's not like here with the RCMP that runs rural communities. It's they have these little detachments. So that is surprising that they would have. Do we know why there's homicides in that area? Because it sounds small and remote.
There is a lot of meth in that area, apparently. Okay. So that's the main reason for crime. And yeah, exactly. Derek Levisher, that he went into their department and like toured it and got to look at all the evidence and everything. So he specifically comments on that. Like, yeah, it's They had boxes and boxes of evidence from Judy's case. It seems like they really did try to investigate and Okay, so 2 weeks later, on October 19th, at around 7:40 p.m., two hunters, like I said, a lot of hunting in this area, they're walking around and they notice the smell of death. So naturally, at first, they think this is like a wild animal of some kind that a hunter didn't pick up, or maybe something that the animals got. But then they see Judy Rawlings' purse. They see a purse on the ground and they open it and her ID is inside.
But not her.
Right. At this point, they said that they immediately called the police. They didn't like do anything further. They just they found the purse and were like, OK, let's call. So police would arrive at the scene, and after searching for a couple of hours, because again, this is such a thick area, then they found Judy's body. Judy was in a field about a half mile away off of Groom Road. And this is significant because it's about a half mile off of the ATV trails and less than a mile from Farlow Oil. And there are pictures, little screenshots of Google Maps that I sent you as well. And everyone who's listening, these photos will be in the YouTube video and on the Instagram page. It basically makes a circle. There's Farlow Oil, and then there's Groom Road, and then there's, I can't remember the name of the street right now, but the area where the Sierra brothers and Judy Rawlings live in their trailer park. It's all extremely close together.
Okay.
So it's been 2 weeks at this point, and yes, it's October, but this is also North Carolina. So her body was in a pretty advanced state of decomposition by the time she was found. She was also...
Do they know, like, do you know if there was any attempts to conceal the body? Like, had there been sticks over top of it or anything, or was she just laying there?
Yes, she was covered in tree limbs, and she also was partially clothed. Her pants and her underwear were missing. So her pants and her underwear are found kind of like when you take your pants off and the underwear is still inside of the pants. Yep. They were found unbuttoned near her body.
Okay.
Her shoes were missing. Those would be found later. So basically, a lot of her belongings were like scattered in various locations. It's not clear if they were intentionally thrown, or another theory that comes up is that she could have been dragged, and her shoes and things like that, her purse, they kind of fell off of her while she was being dragged. But
now, could that be the same with her pants, that they were unbuttoned and as you drag, you know, the pants will start to slip off, especially if the underwear is still in there.
Right. When Derek was there, he specifically asked the lead detective if her pants were unbuttoned. And his whole thing is, if they were buttoned and they had still fallen off of her, that could make sense with being dragged. But the fact that they were unbuttoned and off of her, to him, is indicative of possible sexual assault.
Okay. That they were physically dragged off of her. Okay.
Yes, but there's also a theory that she could have been dragged later from one of the four-wheelers.
Okay.
Her body is also in this advanced state of decomposition. They unfortunately couldn't do a sexual assault test either, so we really don't know for sure what happened there. But we do know a significant amount of larvae was found around her neck, and that area in particular was in a much more advanced state of decomp compared to the rest of her body. They never could determine cause of death, but they think it's possible she was strangled. She had to be identified through dental records because of the state of her remains, and the case has been cold for decades. All this time, Tammy has been praying for answers and justice. There were a couple of suspects. They looked at the owner of Farlow Oil because that was the place she had been allegedly dropped off. They looked at the Sierra brothers, but they had alibis and they couldn't really tie them to anything with evidence, and they never confessed to the crime. There was also like a transient theory, like, oh, maybe this was some random person. But with the location of her body, that doesn't really make sense either. It's such a specific remote area. So Tammy, along with several experts, believe that there are people out there who know what happens to Judy, and there's likely more than one person involved. Friends and family of Judy Rawlings have also questioned Tony's version of events, saying it doesn't make any sense that Judy would have asked to have been dropped off alone at a gas station at night, especially when it was so dark out. So Derek Levisher goes out to this tiny town in North Carolina in 2019, he covered Judy's case in episode 1 of season 2 of Breaking Homicide. He only has a week there, so he knows, like, time is of the essence. And he specifically said when he went on to the Mile Higher podcast for an interview that he was really determined to not leave empty-handed. He was like, I looked these families in the eyes and, like, I could not live with myself if I couldn't find anything.
Right.
So he's really, like, busting his ass trying to find anything. He's combing through all the old boxes. He's calling, interviewing, and he ends up changing a couple of things, you know, that weren't initially done in the investigation, because his whole thing was like, okay, they did it this way. They talked to these people. They didn't find anything. So I'm going to do things differently and hope that we have a different outcome. So he finds a couple of new people to talk to. And he also finds some things in evidence that should have been looked at more thoroughly. So Derek really starts looking at Tony Sierra Jr. Obviously, this is a guy who we really should be looking at as the prime suspect. He does point out that documentation was really different back then. So one of the things he struggled with is this is all paper documentation. Nothing was digital. Yeah. It's really like chicken scratch. So he kept having to like try to decipher things and then go talk to so-and-so and be like, hey, who's this person? What does this mean? So that was definitely a challenge. But one of the first people Derek talked to is Wyatt Farlow from Farlow Oil. And he also was one of the hunters that found Judy's purse.
Okay.
He also later found one of her shoes. Obviously, that's a little suspicious, maybe a little bit coincidental, but this is a tiny town.
Yeah, but after a couple of weeks of searching in that area, nobody finds anything. And then suddenly the one person comes up with two different items in two different locations. Right.
Yes.
Almost like he knew where to go, but can't prove anything. Got it.
Now, nobody has ever said Wyatt Farlow was with this group that night that was riding ATVs. He does hunt in the area, so he's always like walking around. But yeah, it is still suspicious. So Derek has cameras on him. He's talking to him. And he did say he was like visibly nervous, but he was very cooperative. And basically, Derek believes, this is his opinion, but he believes that Wyatt was not involved. As for DNA testing, because that's come up a lot in this case, you know, trying to figure out who could have done this. According to Derek, when he starts looking at everything, it seems like nothing had been tested regarding like what was found on Judy's body. Judy was found, I don't think I mentioned this earlier, she was found with a strap bound around her hands.
Oh, okay.
With DNA, you have to be really, it's so expensive, so you have to be really specific about what to test. They were talking about how they found like beer bottles and cigarette butts, but like those could be anybody's. Sure. So we're not going to test those, but what about Judy's shoes or her purse or this strap? And it seems like from what Derek uncovered, none of this had been tested, and it still has not.
Right. And what about also, because I covered a case one time where it was a very similar situation. She had been, like, her genes had been removed from her physically. And back at the time, of course, their DNA was in its infancy. Mm-hmm. But they were since able to then retest the genes for touch DNA. And then that's how they were able to solve the case. So it sounds like there's a lot of opportunity for at least touch DNA in these cases, which they might not have had or it would have been extra expensive, or maybe only the FBI had access to those kinds of really sophisticated testing on the DNA. So I don't know that we can really blame them. But 2001, they at least knew about DNA.
Yes. But
it could be tested now. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. They did get Tony's DNA also, so they still have that. And yeah, that's a great point. They could definitely test the pants. They could look at, you know, the button and do some swabbing there, or like in her underwear and see if there's like semen in there.
Right.
Derek also tracked down a horse trainer that lived nearby named Danny Cecil. And the way that he says this happened is that while they were filming, the producer kind of pulled up this map of the area and starts looking at like all these houses nearby. And he's like, oh, there's this horse trainer that has this land and it looks like he's been here a long time. And he's right by where Judy's body was found. So I bet we could go talk to him. Danny had quite an interesting story to tell. He said that 2 days after Judy's body was found, so this is October 21st, 2001, He remembers he heard four-wheelers, and up comes two young men. They did match the Sierra brothers' description. He said when he saw these two young men and they realized that Danny was looking at them, they seemed visibly startled, and they started talking about how they were out there trying to find their girlfriend's pocketbook. And this is especially interesting because, you know, Judy's purse was at the scene. Wyatt finds the purse, then they get her body, and then 2 days goes by, they're out there. None of this is public record. So, you know, they didn't know police had found the purse.
Yeah.
So it makes sense that they were out there looking, allegedly.
But they mentioned girlfriend, looking for their
girlfriends. Yeah. But as far as we know, she wasn't in a relationship. That's just what they called her. And then Derek, you know, while he's talking to Danny Cecil, he pulls up a picture of Tony Sierra. And he said at first he was kind of like trying to throw him off. And so he shows him a picture of Tony when he's much older and he's like gained a lot of weight. And he's like, well, he kind of looked like that guy, but like much thinner. And then he shows him like a younger picture of Tony when he was right around the age that Judy was killed. He immediately is like, oh yeah, that's one of the guys I saw. This is also a pretty credible sighting because the detail about the purse, you know, was not public record at that time. That detail didn't come out until Breaking Homicides episode aired. So the fact that like...
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So the fact that like Danny's saying all this in 2019 is pretty significant. He also said he didn't, and this is interesting because it's a tiny town. He said he didn't know the Sierra brothers personally. So it's not like he knew these guys around town. He just was able to describe them and look at the picture, if that makes sense.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply. Andy and Anna here from your new favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two of the four hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? Anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are No Such Thing as a Fish.
So Derek continues to look at the case, and he has no doubt that the Sierra brothers, especially Tony, were involved. And now we're going to introduce someone new to this case. So Michael Turner is an informant. He's now come out publicly, so that's how we have his name. But he shared a holding cell with Tony Sierra Jr. in 2002, so just shortly after Judy Rawlings was killed.
Okay, so he was detained for, was he detained at the time for the murder? Or was he just detained on unrelated charges?
He was detained on unrelated charges. I'm not specifically sure for what, because it lists a couple of things in this article I found. So according to this one article, it says, quote, according to NC Department of Public Safety, Sierra has served a total of 3.5 years in prison for a variety of charges, including common law robbery, driving while impaired, and felony incest.
Ew.
Mm-hmm.
That's disturbing.
Yes. So, and he would have been, so he was like 17 or 18 when this happened. So he would have been probably like 18 or 19 while he was in prison for this. Michael Turner, like I said, shares this holding cell with him and they start talking. All of this would come to light when Derek is going through the investigation boxes. He finds this really old tape and it was from March of 2003. I want to point this out. He finds this within 7 days, which is kind of frustrating because this tape was a long time ago. Everything Michael describes in this tape was not public record at that point, and it matches up with key details from the crime. So in this tape, Michael Turner tells police, now keep in mind this is according to Tony, but Tony told Michael that Judy was on his four-wheeler that night. There were several other people there. People are drinking. Yep. He doesn't specify if Judy was drinking. He said Judy willingly had sex with him. And then this part's kind of confusing. They say possibly with someone else is the wording they use. Mm.
Yeah, I'm sure she was consenting.
Right. Yeah, totally. And then allegedly after that, she, quote, started acting crazy like they raped her.
Right.
Derek's theory at this point is that more than likely what happened is Tony raped her and she maybe said, like, you know, I'm going to tell somebody, or was just like clearly visibly disturbed. And he was like, oh, man, I messed up. Now I have this loose end. He doesn't think that Tony planned to kill her. And I think that makes sense because there are all these other people around.
Well, yeah, exactly. But he might have planned to rape her.
Totally. Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me. So at this point, Michael, you know, is learning all this information from Tony. And so then he was like, well, did you kill her? And he all but said the words, I killed her, because he allegedly admitted to putting a noose around her neck.
Wow.
Dragging her on the back of the motorcycle. That's where the dragging theory comes in.
Oh.
And then burying her in the woods. Literally, he said every possible thing except I killed her. Nobody knew at this time that there was damage to her neck either. That was not public record.
No, but that is like, I mean, there's never an excuse for murder, but you could kind of see like, okay, so he assaults her. She obviously is distressed by that, fighting probably. I could kind of see maybe putting hands on her neck to shut her up.
Yeah, starts like manually.
Or because he's panicking.
Yeah.
But to drag her behind a four-wheeler? I mean, that's like, that's medieval. It's torture. That feels really, really personal. So I want to go back to this felony incest. Do we know what the definition under North Carolina law is of that?
No, but that's a great question. Let's see if we can look that up really quick.
Because I'm interested in what those charges could be related to.
Yes.
Because then that would show what he's capable of.
Yes, and that will, in another case, come up more towards the end of this episode, but not on an incest charge. This is from North Carolina's General Assembly website. Okay, offense. A person commits the offense of incest if the person engages in carnal intercourse with the person's grandparent or grandchild, parent or child, or stepchild, or legally adopted child, brother or sister of the half or whole blood, uncle, aunt, nephew, or niece.
So regardless, it's a felony.
Yes.
I would think, under
we
that,
don't know who this person.
Law.
Yeah, we don't know who this person was.
So it could have been anything from a half sister to a grandmother. Like,
ugh. Yeah. Okay. They don't specify if he had any other siblings. I just know that he had his brother David.
But the felony part of it doesn't specifically mean that some kind of force with a weapon was used or anything like that. Like, it doesn't.
Doesn't look like it. I'm not seeing that in here.
Yeah. I was just trying to get a little context.
Question. Yeah. So Derek has talked to law enforcement extensively about this case. And one of the problems that they say they've run into is that because there were multiple other people there that night and they couldn't do the sexual assault testing, they haven't been able to do DNA testing. They can't like completely confirm and tie this to Tony. They're like, well, it could have been someone else that was there, blah, blah, blah. But Derek's whole thing is he's pushing for, and I think this makes sense, an investigative grand jury. This is when a jury from that area can subpoena and they can look into the facts and the evidence, then decide if they have enough to indict this person. And with this much time having been passed, it's pretty surprising that this hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, well, and same thing with the DNA testing. They have so many articles of clothing that could be potentially really good sources of DNA.
Right.
And they have a potential match against it. So it's not like they're going in blind saying, we just want to test this DNA. They're saying we have a DNA sample from someone that is a person of interest. And then the button on the pants, I don't think she would have unbuttoned those herself. And there was something else you said that they had. Oh, the ties.
The
ropes
strap
on her
hand.
Yeah, that they're obviously somebody physically tied that. So there could be some touch DNA there, too. And her underwear.
Yes.
Although her underwear would have been removed. Yeah, it's a tough one.
Yeah, but I mean, there's multiple things they could definitely test. And obviously, she didn't put that strap on her own hands. So, and that also, they've looked at that strap and been like, hey, like to her family, have you guys ever seen this strap before? And obviously, they're like, no. So this is not an item that belonged to Judy. So it's like, if nothing else, test the freaking strap. If they used a rope around her neck, like Michael Turner was telling police, that rope, from what I could find, it seems like has never been found. So, you know, it makes sense to test that strap on her wrist. Okay, so in July of 2020, Derek said regarding Tony Sierra Jr., quote, I believe he was involved in the rape and murder of Judy Rawlings. I built a strong case against him on an episode of Breaking Homicide a year ago. He was not charged. Today, he was arrested for the rape of a different child. This is unacceptable. We need to act when the evidence is there. End quote.
So now we know definitively what he's capable of. Now, has that gone through the court system? Like, was he convicted of that or
yes.
not yet?
He's in prison.
So he's been convicted. Yeah. Okay. So he's been convicted of it. It's not speculation at this point of what he's capable of.
No, it seems like they had a lot of evidence. We don't know who this victim was, sure. but he was 36 years old when he was arrested. And keep in mind, he was 17 or 18 when this happened with Judy. So another thing that I'm wondering is allegedly all these other victims that we don't know about.
Oh, you know, of course. Yeah.
20 years goes by and he's just not doing anything. I don't believe that for a second.
Yeah.
So on July 15th, 2020, 36-year-old Tony was arrested in Greensboro and charged with felony statutory rape of a child by an adult and two counts of felony statutory sex offense with a child. And when Derek followed up on this with law enforcement, he said, he kind of read between the lines. They didn't say this verbatim, but he said they basically said, well, Tony's in jail now, so we don't really need to worry about the Judy Rawlings case anymore.
Right. Meaning it could have cost us too much money mm-hmm. to investigate it further. So take it as justice, basically.
Yeah.
Her life doesn't matter individually.
And a lot of it also seems like things with, like Derek was saying in the Mile Higher podcast interview, that the DA has also complicated things. They're at like a standstill, quote unquote, where they're like, we need the DA to do something with this for us to be able to get like the DNA testing and stuff like that. So there's issues with them also.
Oh, okay.
Sierra remains a person of interest. He's never been labeled a suspect in Judy Rawlings' murder. Manis, the lead investigator for Judy's case, has said, quote, the evidence that was presented, and he's referring to the evidence by Derek Levisher. We found this to be very factual, but the thing is, pulling it all together takes some time and a lot of work from the district attorney's office and the sheriff's office, end quote.
Meaning money.
Yeah. So her case is still open and unsolved.
For her family, that's awful. Like, I know that there is... I say this as someone who has lost someone through homicide. Our family agrees that there's like levels of grief when it comes to homicide. And in our case, it's near the lower end, right? Because we found her right away. The person that did it confessed and there was a ton of evidence. He pled guilty and there's no appeals. Mm-hmm. So in our case, we're like lucky, I guess, when it comes to murder. And then there's, of course, those families that the person disappears and then you just never know what happened. I mean, that's got to be incredibly painful. But to know that your person doesn't get that closure of putting a name to it, saying this person did that. I mean, it's not really about the time in jail. That's not going to fix anything. And now a murder conviction would probably give him a life sentence as opposed to rape, which they consider a lesser crime. So yeah, that sucks for the family. And I kind of get it in that trials are very expensive and to bring all this forward on a maybe and if. They do circumstantial cases all the time.
All the time. Yeah. I mean, I think Michael Turner would be a really damning star witness to bring up. And like Derek was saying, if we do this jury, I think they have more than enough to indict him. You know, it's just shocking.
Grand juries always come back saying, we might as well go ahead and indict them for it. And he might wind up pleading guilty then. Mm-hmm. And then, you know.
Yeah.
Like, you know, without really putting it forward, especially if it, you know, if he can make some kind of plea deal that he'll plead guilty to it to avoid a lengthier sentence or something. I don't know.
Right.
Because really, at this point, it's about answers.
Yeah. And it's just so frustrating, too, because that interview with Michael Turner was way back in 2003. And basically what Derek was saying about it is it seems like more than likely the cop he talked to just didn't believe him. And so they just like put the tape in the box, but they didn't go any further with that allegation. And then this other victim, whoever they are, you know, was assaulted, and then he gets arrested in 2020. And it's like, if we could have been able to charge him for Judy, then maybe we could have saved some other victims.
Right. And from a lifetime of her trauma, which will then probably get passed on generationally. And it just, the cycle just continues. So yeah, when we can't put them behind bars early, it really sucks.
Yeah.
That's a really tough case. And I hope that they can get some justice. And I think that telling the story often helps with that, because when there's no, because you and I shouldn't speak for you. I'm not a journal. I'm not an investigative journalist. I'm not an investigator in any way, shape, or I'm a storyteller, essentially. And so we have to work with what information's out there, because when things don't go through the court system or when they're not really covered in the media, there's really nothing for us. We don't even know the stories exist.
Mm-hmm.
And to not have anything to take and run with makes it difficult. So we want to get these stories out there that are less known and bring some justice. But it's hard to do when, I guess, the police and the DA's office feel it's just too much trouble.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
He's not worth the money and the investment.
And when you Google Judy Rawlings, like when Jacob first requested this, I was like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do a full episode about this, because there's hardly anything about her online. But then I found Derek Levisher, and because he had gone out there and done so much investigating and then did like media coverage about it, he was my main source. And then he talked about it for like over 2 hours on Mile Higher. So that's a perfect example of like storytellers getting this story out. A story that needs to be heard. So
yeah, and then can maybe put some pressure then on, like, we want some answers. The public wants some answers. Let's get some answers for this family and advocate for victims in that way.
Right.
And I think a lot of people don't understand that about ethical true crime creators. We're not just trying to glorify the violence. We are actually trying to help families and say people's names to get that information out there. So
absolutely.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21+. Terms and conditions apply.
Andy and Anna here from your new favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two of the four hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? Anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are No Such Thing as a Fish.
And she would have fit the narrative that you think the media would have just globbed right onto, right? I mean,
yeah.
Caucasian, pretty young woman. I mean, come on.
16-year-old, yeah.
Yeah, it ticks all their boxes.
Something I just realized I didn't come back to that's also really significant is, you know, initially Tony's mom said that he had come home that night, blah, blah, blah. She later told Derek in an interview with him that she was working third shift. And so she had no way to verify if he was actually there that night. So Tony's alibi is non-existent now.
Yeah, it's almost too bad it didn't happen in Canada, where we could have done like one of those Mr. Big stings and try to get a, because he seems like a prime kind of guy that would be all about, because the other thing is if there was somebody else involved, that's a long time to keep your mouth shut.
Totally.
Yeah, it does. They don't normally keep their mouths shut and they brag, right? Like people mm-hmm. brag, say, "Oh, I did this thing. I held her down. I did whatever." Like they think it's something to brag. So
yeah, I think him talking in jail, that totally doesn't surprise me. That happens all the time. I could totally see that. Like he felt the need to tell somebody, and so it makes sense that Michael Turner was like. Yeah. And also, Michael Turner was not from the area. He, you know, was not there that night. So it's a significant telling.
And he didn't make a plea deal in order to turn that information over, right?
That I don't know. They don't specify okay. that in any of the sources that I found. But yeah, obviously that could muddy the waters a bit. But from everything that Derek said, it seems like he's very credible and they didn't see yeah. any reason in this case for him to like make something up.
Right. Okay.
Will you explain the Mr. Big sting? Because I listened to your episode talking about that, but I was not familiar.
Oh, yeah. Mr. Big stings have been, they've been around since I believe the early 90s. They are pretty uniquely Canadian, and it's where undercover officers basically they pretend to be part of this big criminal underbelly organization. And so what they will do, they're really expensive, is they survey the person. They have to have somebody who they really feel is a strong suspect. And they will survey them and kind of like figure out what they're all about. And then they figure out a way to entice them into joining this organization. Maybe it's like, hey, you can make quite a bit of money. All you have to do is deliver this package here or whatever. And you do a few of those. They want to get more into this organization, right? It seems just really great. So then they say, well, you know, Mr. Big, which hopefully they use a different name than Mr. Big, but they say that this, the crime boss, basically, what he needs is loyalty, and he needs people that aren't going to have any loose ends. So if you've done anything, if there's any evidence out there that, you know, somebody or anything hanging over your head, we need to know that you're, you know, not going to be found out or whatever. We'll help you out with that. And so then they'll confess under recording to something that they did. And they have to have, nowadays, you have to have some holdback evidence. So you have to say something that only the killer would know. And they really only use them in like either big time drug operations or murder because okay. they're extremely expensive. And so they're a great tool. They surprisingly work a lot of the time in getting confessions. It would be nice if they could use something like that. But they are also somewhat controversial because they feel like, well, maybe he was coerced into.
I could see that.
But they're admissible in court as long as you can show that there's some holdback evidence that it's a credible confession.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like if they were able to do something like that with Tony combined with all of the other evidence that they have, that would be pretty yeah. damning.
Yeah. I know they do a lot of times in the States, they'll plant somebody in the cell undercover, but it's usually when they're in detainment, like when they're in holding cells, not when they're actually in prison.
Right.
Because that would get a little dangerous for the undercover officer.
Sure.
So at this point, that's a little bit harder. But the fact that his confession really lined up with a lot of the evidence, you would think that would have been a credible. I don't think that's hearsay.
Right. Yeah, I don't think so either. And yeah. I don't think that it was she voluntarily had sex with him, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, of course.
I think that's
yeah. They always say it's consensual, right?
Right. Yeah. That you see that a lot where they'll like admit to doing this really horrible thing, but they can't go 100%. So they'll say like one lie to try to make themselves look better somehow. It's yeah. just wild to me. But yeah. that is the unsolved homicide of 16-year-old Judy Rawlings.
What a horrible case, and it lines up with so many unsolved cases out there where you're pretty sure you know, but without that definitive answer, at least the one that goes through the court system, there's always the maybe. And the fact that, so what kind of sentence is he serving right now?
So I couldn't find a lot about that online, but Derek like talks about that. I think it's in his Mile Higher interview. He said he had to like call law enforcement, and he did this interview like a year ago. So it's pretty recent. Yeah. He said he had to call them, and they made it sound like he was going to be in prison for like 25 to 30 years. But I don't know specifics.
Yeah, but he was only 36. So chances are he's, well, with overcrowding and stuff down there. He's probably out already.
Ugh, God, I hope not. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully we don't see his face on the news again, but I will put all of the sources for this down below. And yeah, just a special thank you to Jacob for bringing this story to my attention. And then to Derek Levisher and Mile Higher with Kendall Ray and Josh, because you guys did a lot of work on this case. And like I said, there's just not a lot about Judy online. And so more people need to know her story.
Yes, for sure.
And thank you, Kim, for joining me. Do you want to talk a little bit?
Thank you for having me.
Yes. And do you want to talk a little bit about your show as well? A Million Other Choices. Sure.
Yes. So I have it's a podcast and a YouTube channel. I started it about 5 years ago now. And so my niece was murdered in 2018 by her boyfriend. And I'd always had a long interest in true crime, but now I had an interest in really trying to get into the, like, why are these things happening? Why do they continue to happen? And so I started a podcast, and I've been doing a lot of just researching and learning as I go about murder and why it happens, how it happens, how it gets solved. And so I have episodes that come out on the podcast that come out on Mondays and Fridays on YouTube.
Yes. Everybody go check out Kim. She's doing awesome work. I know one of the most highly requested things I get time and time again is a true crime case. And so that is what Kim does. So I'm sure my listeners would enjoy checking out your podcast. And if you guys do and you enjoy, tell Kim where you found her. I always like knowing where you guys come from. So
yeah, great.
And Kim's links will be down below also. So thanks again, Kim. This was great.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I hope you guys enjoyed today's episode about Judy Rawlings. What a heartbreaking story. It's just so upsetting. There's still so many questions. I am really thankful to Jacob for bringing this to my attention so that I can get it out to more people, because more people need to know about Judy. I hope her family has been able to find some type of peace and move forward. You know, I can't imagine. If you enjoyed the way this story was told, let me know. I always like to hear from you guys, and you can continue to send topic requests. This is the last episode of season 3. So if you want to lock in a request for season 4, send it my way. You can always email me, perplexitymysterypodcast@gmail.com, or you can DM me on Instagram @perplexitymysterypodcast. There's always pictures for every episode on there too. So if you guys aren't already following, do that. And I just want to remind everybody to continue to tell people about the show, leave a 5-star review. If you are interested in joining the Perplexed Society for as little as $2 a month, you can always do that at patreon.com/perplexitymysterypodcast. Yeah, I'm super grateful for you guys. Looking back, this has been a huge season. So much growth has come, and I am learning so much. I love doing this show so much. And I'm sorry, I'm getting a little bit emotional. I'm very grateful for getting to tell these stories and that you guys are listening every week. So thank you. And I love all of you so much, and I look forward to bringing you more stories and keeping you perplexed in season 4. You all are amazing. I hope you have a great week. Please stay safe, and I will talk to you next week. Bye, everyone.
Perplexity, a Mystery Podcast, is hosted, written, and produced by me, Kadra Brannon. This show is proud to be a part of the Black Cat Network. Assistant editor is Charlie Leopold. Assistant producer is TJ McRae. Theme song by Patrick Thompson. Music for this episode is from Pixabay. If you enjoyed today's episode, leave a 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts. If you have a story to share or a topic request, email perplexitymysterypodcast@gmail.com. Contact, support, and merch links can be found in the episode description. And you can always unlock early and ad-free episodes and exclusive bonus content by joining the Perplexed Society at patreon.com/perplexitymysterypodcast. Until next week, stay curious.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Andy and Anna here from your new favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two of the four hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? Anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are No Such Thing as a Fish.